T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Hey, welcome back to At Your Service here this evening. Brad Young sitting in with you for the next hour. Glad you're with us here on a Wednesday evening. And as I've mentioned this evening, if you want to text us, we've got a lot of great texts. I think I've gotten like over 30 texts tonight. So that's fantastic. Keep those texts coming. And two in particular, actually, I've got to read you two of these. One person texted in and said, "I'm a conservative who was much happier before Joe Biden was in the White House." Now, see, that's funny. Now, come on. Regardless of your political persuasion, that is funny. And another person saying another great show tonight, and glad you're going after Sam Page. So and we are not going after him personally. We're going after his policies. We're going after his lack of transparency, and we're going after his refusal to be accountable to the people of St. Louis County. That's what we're going after. And I'm going to continue to go after him. Again, I filed today. I filed personally through my law firm. I filed a Freedom of Information Act request in Missouri. It's called a Sunshine Law request to get access to all the records. Now, I fully anticipate that the St. Louis County government will refuse my request. And when they do, I'll file suit. And I've already recruited several attorneys, including Jane Duker, to help me file that lawsuit to get those records. This is not something that we're going to drop, because accountability and transparency in government is important. It's very important. And we saw with the previous administration, with Steve Stenger, what the lack of transparency and the lack of accountability, what it produced in our county government. It produced a felon, is what it did. It produced a county executive who went to prison because he felt that he was not accountable to the folks and the citizens of St. Louis County. And as a result of that, he went to prison because of his actions. Now, I'm not suggesting necessarily that Sam Page has done anything criminally wrong with regard to this Faisal Khan situation, but we are going to enforce accountability. And that's the reason why I filed that Sunshine Law request today. And as I get results from that, I will bring them to you right here on Camo X Wednesday evenings from 8 to 11, at least until baseball starts. So I will bring that to you once I receive a response from Sam Page's office. One of the things that Sean Michael Lyle mentioned at the top of the hour news here on Camo X was about Boeing. Now, one of my many, many interests is in military technology. And I've got lots of friends who work at Boeing. And what's funny is I tell them about stuff that's going on with Boeing technology. And I have this happen to me at least once a week, where a person from Boeing, and there's lots of people that I know at Boeing, but I'll send them something in the news about a Boeing aircraft or a missile or technology they're developing, and they'll write back and say, "I didn't know that." And so I tell them, "Listen, if you want to know anything about Boeing, you just ask me." But what's interesting is that Boeing has instituted this December 8th deadline for people to be vaccinated. So if you are going to work for Boeing, you have to be vaccinated. Now, let me show you the ridiculous position that Boeing and other companies are taking on this. Because not only has this been publicly reported, but I personally know several Boeing employees who work 100% remotely. Yes, they're working at home on their home computer, and they attend Zoom meetings, and they work on their computer doing data crunching for Boeing, and they're going to have to be vaccinated or lose their jobs. Now, why on earth does a person who works from home have to be vaccinated? Why is that? What earthly reason or purpose does that serve or advance if you're requiring remote workers to be vaccinated? They're not allowing any exemptions to this vaccine mandate. They're just taking a hardline position saying, if you're not vaccinated, you're going to get fired. Well, Southwest Airlines took that position until yesterday when they changed their mind. Why do they change their mind? Because what's the greatest thing in demand today in America is employees. If you know, everywhere you go, they're hiring. Companies need workers. And if you institute a ridiculous vaccine mandate, and listen, I'm coming to you as a person who's not only been vaccinated twice with the Pfizer vaccine, I even got the booster shot 3 weeks ago. I was one of the first 200,000 people in this country to get the booster shot because I believe in the vaccine. So I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm an anti-mandate person. And so it makes no sense legally, ethically, or scientifically to have remote workers give them a requirement to be vaccinated. It is simply absurd. And so, like I was saying with Southwest Airlines, they had to change their corporate position on this issue because they were going to lose vital employees that are necessary for the continuation of business operations at Southwest Airlines. And folks, I don't know if Boeing has thought this through or not, but they face the exact same risk and challenge as does Southwest Airlines. If you're building an F-18, an F-15 EX, or an MQ-25, or a T-7A Red Hawk out at Boeing St. Louis, or if you work at Phantom Works working on some deep black project that nobody knows about, and you lose 30% of your workforce because you try to enforce a ridiculous vax mandate, how are you going to complete those projects when you're already understaffed, even now when you don't have a vax mandate? It's going to be a challenge for Boeing, and I would hope that they, just like Southwest Airlines, would reassess their position on a mandate because it doesn't follow the science. It's not required. It's not going to be required by the federal government, I can promise you that. And we'll talk about that in the next hour or in the next, 30 minutes or so. But it shouldn't be required, and they should rethink their position just like Southwest Airlines. Hey, right after this break, you know, today is Vice President Kamala Harris's 57th birthday. She's 57 years old today. Happy birthday, VP Harris. And she's celebrating her birthday by encouraging churches to violate the tax code. I'm going to break it down for you here on At Your Service on Camo X. We'll be right back. Yep. Happy birthday to Vice President Kamala Harris, 57 years old. And, you know, she's not alone here with regard to trying to get out the vote in Virginia. You know, in about 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks, a little less than 2 weeks now that I'm doing the math in my head, there's going to be an election for governor in the state of Virginia. And Virginia used to be a solidly red state. And over the years, it became a purple state. There's a very good reason for that. It's because of the growth of government has spilled over into the Virginia suburbs. And if you look at the map and you can see the trends, I've looked at this. They're available at realclearpolitics.com, and you can see how over time, as the Washington, D.C. capital has grown, because people who work in government don't necessarily live in Washington, D.C. They live in Virginia, they live in Baltimore, they live in Connecticut, they live all over the place. So as it has grown, the growth of our federal government has impacted the electoral votes and the electoral sympathies of the state of Virginia. So where it used to be red, it's now blue because by and large, bureaucrats typically are liberals because they're for the growth of government. So having said that, the Democrat establishment has really been just pulling out all of the stops over the past few months to try to get Terry McAuliffe elected as governor of Virginia. Because he's the former governor, they thought it was a shoe-in. When he started out with the election, he was miles, miles ahead of Glenn Youngkin, who's a businessman who's running against Terry McAuliffe. But as in almost in direct proportion, as President Biden's polling numbers have fallen faster than my hairline, at that point, so has Terry McAuliffe's. And Glenn Youngkin is increasing in popularity in direct proportion to how much President Biden is becoming unpopular, not only in this country in general, but in Virginia in particular. So like right now, President Obama, former President Obama has been campaigning. Now, Biden's not campaigning for Terry McAuliffe because they don't want him anywhere close to. In fact, Terry McAuliffe has had to distance himself from President Biden because of the unpopularity of President Biden. So in order to try to get out the vote, obviously Biden's not going to be having any part of that. The Biden administration recruited Vice President Harris to start campaigning for Terry McAuliffe. Now, what she did was this. She recorded a video. It was played in over 200 churches last Sunday. And it's going to be played in many of those same churches, if not more, this Sunday. So here on Wednesday evening, we're right smack dab in the middle of this video being played in churches last Sunday and again this Sunday. And the problem is, it blatantly violates Section 501c3 of the IRS tax code. Now, you're probably saying, oh, Brad, you're kind of over, you're exaggerating here. You're mischaracterizing what she said. But this is, I'm going to play you, this is exactly what Vice President Kamala Harris said, and I edited it down for time. I didn't take different cuts or parts. I just took one section of it so you could hear exactly what she said, and I'll break it down for you in terms of how what she is saying in that video violates federal law. Here is Vice President Kamala Harris.
Virginians, you deserve a leader who has a vision of what is possible and the experience to realize that vision. Terry McAuliffe is that leader. In 2020, more Virginians voted than ever before, and because you did, you helped send President Joe Biden and me to the White House. This year, I know that you will send Terry McAuliffe back to Richmond. So early voting has already started, and this is the first year that you can vote on Sunday. So please vote after today's service. And if you cannot vote today, make a plan to go vote. Go to iwillvote.com.
You heard in that video that she specifically endorsed Terry McAuliffe. She specifically instructed church members, and it was primarily African-American churches, to get out and vote. She even said, after church today, go vote for Terry McAuliffe. Now, if you look at Section 501c3, everyone's heard of that section. Almost every church in America, every not-for-profit corporation is under Section 501c3. That's why when you give money to your church, it's tax deductible. But Section 501c3 specifically, and I'm reading here, prohibits churches or any 501c3 organization, prohibits the participation in or intervening in, including the publishing or distributing of statements in any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for public office, period, unquote. Now, that is directly from Section 501c3 of the tax code. So it specifically prohibits any 501c3 organization, which includes every single church that that video was played in, from endorsing any candidate or participating in or distributing any statements of, on behalf of, or in opposition to any candidate for public office. And you just heard Kamala Harris instructing church members to go vote for Terry McAuliffe. What she didn't hear in the rest of the 2.5 minutes of that video was her going on and on in great detail about how great Terry McAuliffe is, how he has helped pass legislation in Virginia that helped all of these different groups of people, and how wonderful he would be if he returned him to be governor. It was a specific, direct, and an unequivocal endorsement of Terry McAuliffe. And it was played in over 200 churches. Now, if I were the legal counsel for the White House, I would point out that in a technical sense, the White House may not have violated the law because last time I checked, the White House is not a 501c3 organization. So they're not necessarily bound by that section of the tax code. But by recording that video and distributing that video to over 200 churches, the White House is specifically encouraging all of these churches to violate the tax code. That's what they're doing. And what's interesting here is there's a complete conflict of interest. There's a complete conflict of interest here because who would be enforcing that? In other words, if a church violates Section 501c3 of the tax code, who would be charged with enforcing that violation? You guessed it. The IRS, who works for President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. So even though they may not be specifically violating the tax code, they're certainly inducing organizations and encouraging organizations to violate the law, and they've got a conflict of interest in the event those churches do, in fact, violate the law. And to me, it's amazing that this is not getting more coverage in the mainstream media than what it's getting. In fact, it's getting almost no coverage at all. And to me, it's outlandish that this type of violation of federal law is completely overlooked by the mainstream media. Now, I got to tell you, years ago, I know we're coming up here on a break, but years ago, we had someone who, a politician, came and spoke at my church here in St. Louis, in the St. Louis area. And when this politician came to speak, I told him, you can't talk about politics. No one's going to endorse you. No one's going to encourage people to vote for you. And you have to talk about moral issues only, not about political issues. And so that's what he did. He sang a hymn. He talked about growing up in the church. And then he talked about things of moral nature, not political nature. And that was it, because I instructed him, I don't want to get our church in trouble here. And there was no endorsement of him. And yet, at the same time, I had a church member come up to me and say, what you're doing is illegal. And I said, why is it illegal? Because you're having a politician speak at church. I said, no. You can have a politician speak at church. You just can't endorse them or have them address political issues. I've done the research. And yet now, when someone on the left is doing it, all you're hearing is crickets. I know we got some folks here that are holding online. I'm going to get to those callers in just a moment, but I got to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to take your calls, 314-436-7900, at your service on KMOX. Well, did Vice President Kamala Harris violate federal law? You be the judge, 314-436-7900. Hey, let's go to the phones. We got a call from Quincy, Illinois. Hey, welcome to KMOX. Hey, this is you.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I'm not from Quincy, but close. My name's Warren.
Oh, hey, Warren. I'm sorry. Your name's not up here, but it came up as Quincy. So, Warren, welcome to KMOX. What's on your mind?
You are great. KMOX should have you on a lot more. I mean that. Okay.
I'm sorry. Wait, I couldn't hear you. Could you say that again for me?
You are great.
Sorry, I just couldn't help but ask you that. I heard you. Thank you very much.
You know what? You're running out of people to talk to.
What's on your mind?
You're terrific, Brad.
Thank you.
I've turned on to you several times. You're on KMOX. I want to listen.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I'll be on every Wednesday night for the foreseeable future. So tune in on Wednesday nights.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. Two subjects. You pick it. Too much, not enough room tonight. You can call me back. You got my phone number.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Stan Kroenke and his financial report.
Yes.
Okay. Second subject, House Un-Americans Committee meeting in Washington, D.C. I was there.
Really? Well, tell me about that meeting, because I've got a lot of opinions on Stan Kroenke, but I was not even born. I was not even born yet for the House subcommittee meetings on un-American activities. Okay. Tell me about that. How is it that you were there?
I went out to visit my U.S. congressman from here in Illinois, and I asked the office, what is something to go to? They said, the thing to go to is Senator Joe McCarthy in the House Un-American Committee meeting, because the leader of the American Nazi Party, Lincoln Rockwell, was going to testify.
Wow. Boy, bring and the popcorn for that.
That was raucous. Raucous, okay? Every press camera, every TV camera in the world was there for that one. And Lincoln Rockwell showed up in his Nazi uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was there to capture the attention of the press. He knew how to play it, and he did.
Sure.
Yeah, it worked, yeah. And Senator Joe McCarthy was about to hang him. So I went to took my congressman's advice. I went to whatever the meeting room was. Well, it was packed, and I had to stand in the back.
Mm-hmm.
That was okay. So they were throwing arrows at each other. Each one was creating national attention. That's what it amounted to. I don't think anything was solved.
But you obviously, Warren, you heard me earlier when I was talking about on this day in 1947, the Red Scare investigation started in Congress. But the point I was making, and I want to see if you agree with this, but I was trying to compare the 1947 to today. And as much as the liberals and progressives were outraged at being investigated by Congress in the 1940s and 1950s, we have much the same today. If you're a conservative today, if you're a Christian today, if you stand up against moral issues of the day, whether that's homosexuality or transgenderism, you're canceled by corporations, you're fired by companies, you can't get work in Hollywood. Do you see any comparison? Okay. Because you actually experienced the Red Scare investigation. Any comparison with that today?
No. Yes and no. More in 1967, 1968 than today. And what's the difference? Much more news coverage by guys like you.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you've been on the air in Camel X in 1967, they wouldn't have gotten by with this stuff.
Okay. Interesting. Okay? I hadn't thought of that.
Well, social media has played a big part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, you could go to any kind of a cable or free social media site, and I'm on one that's free. I'm not going to plug them on the radio. I'm not going to do that to you. But it's fantastic. The amount of information flow is the key. In 1967, you turned on the evening news.
That's all
Walter
you had.
Cronkite,
all you had was Eric Walter Severide. Cronkite. Yep.
Eric Severide, Walter Cronkite, John Chancellor, you name them. We believed them. We turned the dial, and they were there, and they told us what Joe McCarthy was doing and Lincoln Rockwell was saying at the halls of Congress. And we believed it. That's all we had. It was the diversity of opinion because of the restriction of access to real news then compared to now. Of course, we didn't have a cell phone then. You know, I was lucky to have an antenna on top of my house.
No kidding. Yeah, that's right.
I'm not in Quincy. I'm east of that.
That's okay, Warren. I just didn't have your name up here on my call screener software, so I wasn't sure of it. But, Warren, I want to appreciate you. I want to thank you, rather, for calling in. I appreciate your perspective.
Stan Kroenke, you haven't heard this.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. What's your Stan Kroenke story?
He owns 2,000 acres of land in Santa Barbara, California.
Okay.
Why is that important? Because in Santa Barbara, California, they raise grapes and produce wine, lots of grapes. Okay. I had supper in Santa Barbara, California, several nights at the Hilton out in Lompoc, California. You want to find out what Boeing is doing? Look into Vandenberg. That's in Lompoc. But I had supper several nights a week with the guy who appraises vineyards. Okay. The space between the vineyards, between the vines and Lompoc or Santa Barbara, California, is going for, this is his value of that land. $15,000 an acre between the vines per month.
Wow. That's pretty expensive.
And he asked me, do you know Stan Kroenke? Yeah, I think so. Okay. That's the value of his 2,000 acres in Santa Barbara. And if he's telling the St. Louis Rams or the judge down there, well, I got 2,000 acres of growing weeds or corn or something, that's crap. That 2,000 acres is worth $15,000 an acre between the vines.
Per month.
Per month.
Per month. Well, I'm going to tell you, Stan Kroenke may have to sell a few of those acres, my friend, because I am with 97.6% certainty. I'm telling you that the Rams litigation with St. Louis will settle before it goes to trial. And the reason it will settle is because people like Stan Kroenke and Robert Kraft and all of the other owners in the NFL, number one, they don't want to disclose their financial holdings. They don't want to publicly admit how wealthy they are, which the judge is forcing them to do. But secondly, and more importantly, they don't want to be Grudened, meaning all of those emails that John Gruden sent 10 years ago came out and ruined him. Think about what the emails and texts are between the owners of the NFL. All of those could become public. Robert Kraft discussing his massage parlor activities. He doesn't want to disclose those publicly, and that means that they will settle.
I agree. Okay, what if Stan Kroenke said, I have 2,000 acres for growing grapes? That's fraud.
Yeah, that's fraud, because your point is it's worth 12 times $15,000 per acre per year. So, yeah, I get it.
No. Per month.
Yeah, per month. But it's $15,000 an acre per month times 12 gets you per year. And then, you know, that's just the rental value. Right. So, he there's a reason why he's worth at least $5 billion. And grapes is certainly part of that.
Whenever I hear all those news stories from the news department about Kroenke and all the Rams and all this stuff, I had supper with the appraiser.
Yes, you did. How interesting. Well, Warren, you've got interesting stories to tell. Appreciate you calling in this evening on Camo X.
Good show. Thank you,
sir. Keep listening. Well, yeah, I can almost promise you. I'm not going to completely promise you, because there is no, with litigation, there's no way to make a 100% certain conclusion. But based upon my experience as an attorney, I can tell you that I think this case will settle. And the only question is it going to settle for money, or is it going to settle for something less liquid, like giving St. Louis a franchise, an expansion franchise for the NFL? Now, I know a lot of national analysts are predicting that the settlement will include an expansion team for St. Louis. Now, I'm not saying that that can't happen. I'm simply suggesting that that's unlikely, because it still leaves us with the same problem. How do we build a stadium? So if they want to sell an expansion team to a group of St. Louis investors, and the NFL would build a stadium as their settlement of this litigation, that's a possibility. But keep in mind, any settlement has to be approved by all the plaintiffs. The plaintiffs are St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and the St. Louis Convention Bureau. All three of those would have to agree to any settlement terms. And given the disparities between St. Louis City and St. Louis County, I just think that that type of settlement would be unlikely. The far more likely settlement would be for the NFL simply to write a check. And when I say the NFL, let me clarify something. It was disclosed about a month ago that when Stan Kroenke talked the NFL into signing off on his desire to move the Rams from St. Louis to Los Angeles, part of that negotiation involved Stan Kroenke personally signing an indemnification agreement with the NFL regarding all damages and all attorney's fees from any litigation that arises as a result of the move of the team. What does that mean? Indemnification agreement. That means that Stan Kroenke agreed to reimburse all of the owners and the NFL itself for all damages, awards, settlements, or attorney's fees related to the litigation. So at some point, if this case settles for, say, $750 million, if that's the eventual settlement amount on this litigation, that's not coming from the NFL. That's not going to come from the owners. That's going to be coming directly from Stan Kroenke's wallet. Now, again, he's worth $4 or $5 billion, but if he has to pay $750 million plus all the attorney's fees, and listen, he's got the most expensive attorneys that money can buy in St. Louis. They're running up millions of dollars of attorney's fees. He's got to fund all of that. That will get his attention. What do you think about this? I mean, we talked about this last week, but do you think this case is going to settle? Do you think it'll go to trial? Or do you think that the St. Louis area will get an expansion team? What would you like to have happen? 314-436-7900. Would love to hear your thoughts on this. Brad Young at your service. We'll be right back. Well, we're winding down here with a little Panama from Van Halen going into the last segment. Glad you're up late with us tonight. Much appreciated. We had a lot of great calls, a lot of great texts. Thank you very much. Appreciate that here on At Your Service. Hey, there's one story here that I absolutely had to get to because the headline that I saw today, and actually saw this in more than one publication, was that the Supreme Court won't block vaccine mandates. And the implication was, because as you well know, President Biden has stated, although we haven't seen it yet, it's what we call in the computer industry vaporware. You promise it, but it never materializes. He's promised this vaccine mandate through OSHA, where it will require every company with 100 or more employees, it will require them to force all employees to become vaccinated. Now, again, as I said, I think in the last segment, my position on this is very clear. I am pro-vaccine, very pro-vaccine. But I'm also anti-mandate, and those positions are not those are not opposite positions. And here's why. The law on this, and we can debate whether this is good or bad, but the law on this issue is actually quite clear. And the Supreme Court yesterday upheld a consistent opinion with this legal doctrine, and that's the following. Under the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution, the states are empowered to have all power not delegated to the federal government. So there's nothing in the Constitution that gives the federal government power over health and safety rules, regulations. So that's reserved for the states. And as far back as 1904, the U.S. Supreme Court held in the case of Jacobson versus Massachusetts that a state can have a vaccine mandate. Now, back in 1904, it was, I think, the smallpox vaccination, and the state of Maine had required everyone to get a smallpox vaccination. Somebody challenged it. Supreme Court held, yep, that's a state power. So yesterday, when the Supreme Court refused to block this vaccine mandate, the implication from the mainstream media was that, well, see, this is the reason why Joe Biden can issue a presidential vaccine mandate through OSHA, because the Supreme Court won't block it. And folks, that is the worst legal reasoning ever. And I'm telling you that that is not what will happen when it's applied to the federal vaccine mandate from President Biden. Why do I say that? Because clearly, if you go back to Supreme Court precedent from 1904 through yesterday, the states are empowered to require a vaccine. That's what the Supreme Court held. So when Maine signed into law a vaccine requirement that requires hospitals and nursing home workers to be vaccinated or be fired, that was a state law. And so the Supreme Court from 1904 until yesterday has been very consistent. The state can mandate a vaccine, but there is not one case, there is not one statute, there is not one regulation, there is not one legal precedent of any kind that allows the federal government, Joe Biden, the President of the United States, or OSHA to require employers to require all employees to be vaccinated. Zero. And we saw exactly how this is going to happen. This is what's called an overreach of an executive agency. And we saw exactly how this is going to play out just this summer. You remember that the White House issued an eviction moratorium. And President Biden even had a press conference. Well, not really a press conference. It was a speech to the country where he said, I don't have the legal authority to prevent landowners, to prevent people who own houses, landlords. I don't have the power to prevent them from evicting individuals who can't pay their rent. And then Cori Bush, our own congresswoman here, a member of the squad, goes out and camps out on Capitol Hill, and she tweets the entire time, and she FaceTimes and does all this stuff from social media, and generated a backlash by progressives against President Biden. We need an eviction moratorium. So then he goes and issues one through the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. And folks, that was shot down by the U.S. Supreme Court by 6-3 margin, and it took about 2 weeks. From the time it was issued to the time it was stricken, took about 2 weeks. And if you look at the Supreme Court decision from that case, the Supremes ruled that the reason it was stricken was because it was a beyond the reach of an executive agency to do what in effect is legislate by law when there's no congressional authority to prevent landlords from evicting tenants. And we have the exact same situation with OSHA. There's never been any congressional authority that authorizes OSHA to require vaccine mandates. None. Zero. And so when this case comes up to the Supreme Court, which it will, as soon as President Biden gets it through OSHA, which eventually will happen, when that does happen, I promise you folks, it's going to be stricken. Now, we can debate whether we should or not on a state level, but that's really what the Constitution is designed to do. I think that should be the position of abortion. If California wants to have laws that allow abortion, let them. If Missouri wants to have laws that prevent an abortion, let them. And the same should be true with vaccines. And people should be allowed to vote with their feet. If you don't like, if you're a progressive and you're in Missouri and don't like it, listen, Illinois is not too far away, okay? You can vote with a U-Haul and go to Illinois. But what's interesting is if you look at the migration patterns of Americans today, they're moving out of blue states and they're moving into red states. I got a friend of mine who is in Nashville. And I just talked to him this week, and he said, we can't handle the growth of the folks moving here. It's explosive growth because people are coming here. It's low taxes. It's corporate friendly. There are plenty of jobs. Come on. And he was almost like working for the Chamber of Commerce for Nashville, Tennessee. And that certainly isn't the case in Illinois, where people are fleeing faster than, you know, drought-stricken Africa. And they're just trying to get out of Illinois as fast as possible. So they're voting with their feet. And that's really the way that it should be. And so when this vaccine mandate is eventually issued through OSHA, folks, I'm telling you, it will be stricken. And the fact that you haven't seen it promulgated yet shows you that when President Biden made that announcement, he did so as a PR stunt. In other words, by announcing he was going to do it, and never actually doing it, he convinced companies like Boeing, like Southwest Airlines, like Delta Airlines, like United Airlines, and the list goes on, that they should be requiring vaccine mandates of their employees. Thankfully, Southwest Airlines saw the light, and they're not requiring it now. Boeing should do the same because it's not going to be required on a federal level. Hey, Brad Young sitting in with you this evening here on KMOX at your service. I'll be back next Wednesday evening. So until then, make sure that you stick around for Our American Stories at 11 o'clock here on KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.